unrestrained spending and exorbitant and luxurious living doesn't quite fit in with the Grand Rapids that we've been looking at. But indeed, we do have a good example of such in the person of David Joyce. Joseph Wolesky of Grand Rapids was the longtime caretaker for the Joyce estate, and his son Joseph spent much time there during his growing up years. Afterwards, he too was employed there, and ultimately he also held the caretaker position. Over the years, Joe began gathering information and documents pertaining to the Joyce family. I interviewed him at length, and let's take a look at his thoughts and reflections in regard to both the family and the estate. In the 1840s, the Joyce family established in New England a lucrative lumber business and did their part in diminishing the unending forests of that area. And when they nonetheless did come to an end, they, like the other lumber barons, moved west looking for more unending forests. It was about 1890 that William, then the head of the company, arrived in Minnesota, and he headed directly to Grand Rapids. And there he began acquiring in the vicinity huge tracts of forest land. What Joyce named the Itasca Lumber Company, headquartered in Chicago, soon became the largest logging camp in all of Itasca County. David Joyce was born in 1895. And a year later, his brother Stanley was born. During David's teen years, William often took his son along on trips to Grand Rapids, hoping, unsuccessfully, to interest and involve him in the family logging operations. While David enjoyed life, the sometimes more serious-minded Stanley attended and graduated from Yale University. In March of 1909, stunned officers of the Itasca Lumber Company received word that William had unexpectedly died in Chicago. Indicative of the success of his business, William left an estate valued at $120 million. His widow received $60 million, and David, at the age of 23, received $30 million, and 20-year-old Stanley inherited a like amount. The brothers took control of the family business. Stanley would direct affairs from the Chicago headquarters, and David, having traveled with his father, would oversee field operations. David Joyce, continuing the pleasurable lifestyle he had adopted, didn't take his responsibilities at all seriously. He'd already acquired a strong inclination toward liquor, and the first action he took after his father's death was to fire the bouncer, who had been hired in a vain effort to curtail his drinking. Others from the Chicago office were sent to look after the company interests that David neglected. With his millions, and remember these are $1910, so they really were something, with his millions providing virtually unlimited spending, David Joyce extended his fast life with an avid interest in fast cars. He met Barney Oldfield, the famous race car driver who was first to break the one-minute mile record. He and Oldfield spent a lot of time together and toured the United States attending race performances. After Oldfield retired from professional driving, he was frequently invited to make special appearances at various racing events, and David Joyce often accompanied him. David Joyce continued to visit Grand Rapids in the summertime, and Oldfield often joined him. They were frequently to be seen on the golf course located near the Ogama Hotel on Lake Pocagama. After enjoying the summer weeks in Grand Rapids, David Joyce and his entourage would depart for his luxurious Chicago home. When the weather got colder, the Joyces boarded their private rail car with their luxury automobiles, loaded into boxcars, and they departed for Florida. Fully utilizing the money gained from cutting the trees of Itasca County and other far-flung holdings, David Joyce beautifully and lavishly furnished the mansion on his Bonaire estate. It included such amenities as a breakfast room with an Italian inlaid floor, a den for guns, and a card room with a Steinway grand piano. The silver service was so heavy that two people were needed to bring coffee. Joyce also was stocking the large library with rare first edition books as well as valuable manuscripts and letters. Tiffany lamps were everywhere, and David thought nothing of purchasing a $10,000 oriental rug for the library. David Joyce liked birds in elaborate cages, the largest 25 feet across, were scattered about the estate. To properly enjoy his fishing, David Joyce purchased two yachts as well as a 38-foot cruiser. With neighbors such as the Tiffanys of New York, with friends such as the Wrigleys of chewing gum fame, and with charter membership in the Biscayne Bay Yacht Club, life in Miami was gracious and luxurious. After returning to Chicago in the spring and enjoying the Palmer House and favorite watering holes, the Joyces, always on the 1st of June, headed for Grand Rapids. There, David Joyce decided to build what he called a hunting camp that would properly accommodate his hedonistic lifestyle. Although already possessing some 4,500 acres of wooded land and lakeshore, David purchased additional property to obtain just the right site on the west shore of Trout Lake, just north of Grand Rapids. In the fall of 1914, F.L. Norman, master builder of log structures, was put in charge of the project. Native pine logs were cut and peeled. Horse-drawn sleighs began delivering construction supplies. Throughout the summer, wagon loads of lumber were delivered while other equipment and materials were brought to the site by barge. As the main lodge neared completion, crates of furniture and household goods, much newly purchased at Marshall Fields in Chicago, arrived in Grand Rapids by rail and were then hauled to the camp. Large Martin houses with copper roofs were among the first belongings to be delivered. A full-time chef was hired. Many more workers were employed to rush plans to make the lodge habitable by the end of the summer. Looking the place over, David Joyce decided to have the grounds professionally landscaped and also to include a 9-hole golf course. A golfer associated with the Grand Rapids course was promptly hired as a consultant. Over the next years, additions and new buildings were constructed. A dark room and a gun room were added to the magnificent main lodge. There was an observatory, a tea house, a fire tower, a light plant building, and barns complete with cows and chickens. Livestock was soon dispensed with, though, as too much trouble. A greenhouse was built, and gardens and a profusion of flowers were added to the grounds. By 1925, the camp, much better referred to as the estate, was essentially complete. After his arrival each June, David Joyce seldom left the grounds, although sometimes he would attend a racing event with Barney Oldfield, or seeking variety and taking a break from the always-on-hand expensive liquor, which was once in a while delivered by plane and parachute to Trout Lake to be picked up by rowboat. And accompanied by whoever happened to be visiting, David Joyce would head for one or another of the Grand Rapids drinking establishments. Having made a selection, his usual procedure was to buy all the beer on hand and then have the place closed for private enjoyment. The chauffeur was required to remain in the car, ready to drive the group home at whatever late night hour the drinking might end. Lasting from June 1st to the day after Labor Day, life on the Joyce estate was one continual party. The light plant ran steadily day and night while relatives and guests were regaled with the fine liquor, beer on tap, and the best of food. Many celebrities spent time there. Automobiles remained of great interest to David Joyce. Over the years, his Grand Rapids fleet included Cadillacs, Delages, a Rio Flying Cloud, a Crane Simplex, Lincolns, an Airflow Chrysler, Duesenbergs, and Packards, as well as more prosaic Fords. On one occasion, David Joyce casually purchased a new Model T sedan from Henry Hughes, who owned the Grand Rapids Ford garage, as well as a grocery store. When asked how he wished to pay for the car, David Joyce responded, "Oh, just put it on the grocery bill." One of the Packards was used to pick up milk and spring water and was getting scratched on the private road to the estate. a Grand Rapids machinist made 2.5-foot long knives and installed them under the running boards on each side of the car. They could be swung open and locked so as to cut brush along the roadway. The effectiveness of this Packard operation has not been recorded. The lifestyle at the Joyce Estate is certainly quixotic, and the Itasca County of hard-working loggers and farmers and miners was almost duplicated on the east shore of the lake. Stanley, only sometimes the more conservative of the two brothers, was envious of David's estate and decided he would construct his own across the lake. Just at that time, Stanley Joyce met the silent film star, very popular Hollywood star, Peggy Hopkins, and after a whirlwind romance, they were married in 1920. Stanley showered her with gifts, including expensive cars, when she made a stop in Bovee and some errand or other, and she certainly grew a crowd of interested people in that town. She also made very clear to Stanley that she had absolutely no interest in Grand Rapids and no interest in woods and lakes. She was used to the glitter and bright lights of Hollywood and of big cities. So that marriage ended in divorce, and that second estate was never built. The land on Trout Lake that Stanley never developed, though, is to this day referred to by area old-timers as Peggy's Point. Even as the partying continued on the Joyce estate, not all was pleasant and easygoing. David Joyce, always impatient, was also always primarily interested in his own well-being. From an early age, he had used his money as a source of power and a means to control those around him. Guests at the estate soon learned that David set the rules: when to golf, when to hike or fish, or when to eat. To disobey was to receive an invitation to depart. Those in the employ of David Joyce feared his violent temper and knew firsthand his lack of compassion and interest for his employees. Even during the Depression years, when jobs were scarce, the employee turnover rate at the Joyce estate was high. David Joyce's was not a life of accomplishment. He did, to the surprise of those who knew him, spend time actually reading the rare and first edition books he had collected. And he did know birds and enjoyed his feeding stations and birdhouses. But in retrospect, mainly David Joyce used his money to flee from life in a whirl of alcohol associated with his frenetic pursuit of luxury. Once, when departing on some expedition or other, in all seriousness, David Joyce told his butler, "Leave the luncheon loaf of bread unsliced," because he wished to rough it. His indeed was a sheltered existence. David Joyce was not a sharing person. He was scrupulous in keeping hunters or hikers or anyone else off of the thousands of acres of land that he owned in Itasca County. He added but little to the region from which he had drawn much wealth and where he spent the summers. Certainly, Grand Rapids storekeepers were always glad to see him. His shopping sprees were most welcome. Local people, even if they often found conditions unpleasant, did find employment with him, and he did give an interesting collection of World War I books to the Grand Rapids Public Library. But beyond that small gift and the dollars that he added to the local economy, David Joyce left no personal legacy either to Itasca County or Grand Rapids. He began drinking ever more heavily. The 1936 season was the last he spent on the estate. His wife Beatrice was there the next year, and it was in August that she was informed that David Joyce, 52 years old, had died in Chicago. He ended his days practically a recluse. The death certificate lists sclerosis of many years standing as a contributing cause of his death. His widow maintained the estate, and then following her, their daughter Beatrice, who had been born in 1923, inherited the property. She grew up showered with every luxury, and early in life she began to follow the same path established by her father. She used money to buy and bribe her way to the easy satisfaction of all desires, and she too discovered alcohol at an early age, and she too used it as a lifetime barrier to reality. She died in 1972 at the age of 49. To settle the terms of her will, her property, including the Itasca County estate, was put up for sale. Valued at $2 million, the Joyce estate was on the open market for some time. Ultimately, it passed into the hands of the United States Forest Service. Beatrice Joyce's wealth was calculated in excess of $130 million. Married and divorced twice and with no children, she had agreed, not altruistically, but as a practical matter, to fund the Joyce Foundation. Headquartered in Chicago, the foundation has supported educational, cultural, environmental, and social service projects, mainly in the Illinois area. At last, the family fortune was used for other than self-indulgence.